This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. Gotcha, you lead us. Gotcha. Okay? Let's go do it. Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
It's a new year and the Seahawks are still alive and kicking. The regular season finished this past weekend and now we move on to wildcard weekend and NFL playoffs. And to do that on this week's Pedestrian Podcast, this week I am joined as ever by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Very well, thank you. Happy New Year, Stu. I remember from our brief WhatsApp rants to each other and conversations on New Year's Eve that a gay time was had by both of us. Yep. And I'm sure you're still feeling the hangover as I am today. So yeah. All's going well.
Yeah, the hangover was quite severe yesterday. Domino's Pizza and all of the Sprite and 7-Up in the world did not placate it at all. It was quite a good night. I think 5:15 is when I eventually tapped out the cup on New Year's Eve, Adam.
Well, I think I took the traditional picture of the fireball bottle on my head at about 2:30. So it's tricky really to know what went on from there. But we're still standing. That's all we can ask for. Yeah.
10-year-old whiskey is not a pleasant partner for New Year's Eve. But anyway, talking is all what was very much needed after what we had to sit through on Sunday evening as the Seahawks closed the regular season at home against NFC West rival Arizona Cardinals, and for the fifth time and the second time of playing this Arizona Cardinals team, it was a game where the Seahawks played down to their opposition, Adam.
Yeah, I have to say that I did the classic thing between Christmas and New Year's of having no idea what day it actually was. And so for some reason, I let Rosie say, we're going out for dinner with friends on the 30th, thinking, well, it's probably like a Thursday or something, because who knows what day it was. And then I realized on the Sunday morning that I was actually going to miss the game. So I only managed to watch the fourth quarter live, and then I obviously watched the whole game condensed on Game Pass or whatever. But it just seemed like the most Seahawk versus Cardinal type game ever. You give them every chance. Larry Fitz does some amazing things. Their defensive line obliterates our offensive line. But the only surprise is we actually came through in the end, which is something we've not seen for, as you say, five years.
Obviously, week four kind of happened the same, and week four ended by the boot of Sebastian Janikowski, and that is how Sunday finished as well. The third time he did it in the 2018 regular season, which for all the criticism and complaints and gripes we've had, you more so than myself, about the kick out, that is quite a refreshing stat comparative to what it is, because it does show something if he is slightly annoyingly inconsistent on him.
I think he is just playing with career house money now. He didn't expect to have a job, I don't think. And I just think he's enjoying the fact that he has one. So he doesn't really give a shit if he misses or makes. And actually, that's kind of a good wiring to have as a kicker.
Yeah.
Unlike someone like Boswell, for example, who's just fallen off a cliff because, he's really trying with every kick to make it. And I guess the more you try, the more you miss. So it doesn't actually surprise me that he's made the big ones, because I kind of feel that's what he's done his bit. He's done his bit in the game. Probably going to be a Hall of Famer. I don't know.
He'll be waiting a while,
but like for him, he's been there, done it, got the t-shirt, and so I think he's just having fun with it. So those are the kicks that I kind of expect him to make, and it's the 48 yarders in the second quarter that don't really mean a lot at that time that are the ones he's going to miss.
Yeah, that's probably fair, but it is encouraging that that has happened more than it didn't happen this year when it mattered at the end of the game. Sunday, though, the Seahawks amassed, as the stat thing went, they amassed just 109 net pass yards. Russell Wilson finished with 152, but was sacked six times. An offensive line, which was minus J.R. Sweezy and DJ Fluka. The initials you really could use for that O-line was WTF on Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the fourth quarter when I got in, and knowing what the Vikings score was, I was confused enough as it is that all of the starters were still in. It seemed like a pretty weird position to be in, given that health is by far the most important thing going into next week. And then all of a sudden, Chris Carson takes an absolute hammering behind the line of scrimmage with about 7 minutes to go. And I think I texted you in a fit of piqued rage about why the hell these guys were still in the game. Yeah, the offensive line did not look too clever, and it's going to have to be infinitesimally better on Saturday for us to go in and win a road game like this.
Yeah, Ethan Postich and Jermaine Fedi slid over to the right guard with George Fant at right tackle, and as we said, it did not hold up well against a defensive line in Arizona, which has names such as... someone called a Rodney Gunter got two sacks on Sunday. Deion Buchanan got two, Russell Wilson once. Antoine Bethea got there once. Chandler Jones got there once. And Zach Moore and Corey Peters shared one as well. I mean, that's not exactly, after some of the names we've faced during the season, the fact that this is probably the worst output that I've always put up is very Seahawky, or another adjective you use for your sports team, though.
Yeah, although Jones and Buchanan have always given us fits.
Yeah.
Hate playing against them. They're so bloody good. Maybe, you know, the players had half an eye on next week. And I guess playing, you know, not fully focused is where you can get hurt or it all goes to shit. So maybe that was the case and we can give them half a pass, but it didn't look too clever.
No, I think one thing, obviously Pete and everyone, Russell Wilson and all the coaches are talking about how it's going to be the same this week as every week. But this is still, it's a young team, and I think that is probably where the immaturity and lack of experience showed most on Sunday, because for all the talk, they obviously did clearly take their eye off the ball a little bit at certain junctures on Sunday. Russell Wilson then finished, as I said, 12-21, 152, one touchdown and one interception, which ended that quest for his record and team record output. He did not run the ball. He ran the ball once, twice for minus 2 yards, one of them his longest with only being a 1 yard run. Also running the ball, though, as ever, was number 32, Chris Carson. Another 100 yard game. He passed 1,000 yards for the season and found the end zone yet again. Obviously, we now walk on to face the Cowboys, which we'll get onto a bit later. But the Cowboys at the start in week three was the start of the Chris Carson experience, really. And it's showed no signs of slowing down since Arizona, really, since week three against the Cowboys, has it?
No, I mean, ironically, I think we commented at the time, he only had like 3 yards a carry in that first Cowboys game. Like, he ran a lot, but it wasn't particularly good.
Yeah.
And I'm slightly worried that if they try and do the same this week, it could cause problems just because of the improvements that Dallas have made on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
But that's where the team claim they got their identity back. And who are we to argue? I mean, they're, what, 10-4 since then?
Yep.
So, it's tricky to say otherwise.
Yeah, Mike Davis did add 44 yards and a touchdown for himself on the ground. Rashad Penny had just 4 rushes for just 6 yards. Ed Dixon apparently ran 1 for 9 yards, which I do not remember at all.
I think it was a pitch pass from Wilson.
Oh, okay. And then on the receiving end, Tyler Lockett had just 2 grabs. But if you have 2 grabs, a touchdown and a long catch, which puts you in game-winning field goal position, it's not a bad output. He also found the end zone yet again. He rounded off his season as he played pretty much every week this season, consistently finding the end zone and been a reliable target like no other receiver has been in NFL history, Adam.
Yeah, perfect passer rating between Wilson and Tyler Lockett, and I would assume that's never happened before on a certain number of plays.
No, it's never happened when it's been, I think, plus 50 catches. Never has there been the perfect 158.3 QB rating when targeting a receiver. I think it's 86% completion percentage when Russell Wilson looked Tyler Lockett's way, and without a drop on the 2018 season as well. Doug Baldwin also got 2 catches for 27, but also had some uncharacteristic drops. Nick Vannett, 2 catches for 17. David Moore, 2 for 16. Jaron Brown, 1 for 7. Mike Davis and Carson also got a couple of grabs in there as well. But it just was a very weird offensive output on Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just the typical Cardinal-style game where you get players making errors you don't expect. I mean, Baldwin had I wasn't sure one of them was a drop. It was quite a low pass, but he had two he'd otherwise expect to haul in within the space of about three or four plays that he didn't, which is really rare for him. And I don't know, there's something about playing them there. You've got that horrible field that gives us fits, and at home, I don't know, the curse of Drew Stanton always lives on.
Yeah, it's just a weird rivalry. I think 58-0, 6 years ago, kind of ruined everything for everyone on the Seahawks. So just weird things happened. I think that Sunday was just another chapter in that. But the Seahawks win. The Seahawks sealed, as Adam mentioned, thanks to Kirk Cousins and Adam Thielen having arguments on the sideline in Minnesota and dropping that game to the Chicago Bears. The Seahawks did seal the fifth seed and this week head over to the Lone Star State to face the Dallas Cowboys. So before we move on to that, though, anyone to praise from Sunday? Defensively wasn't that bad. Josh Rosen seemed to overthrow everyone, including the people on the sideline. But defensively, it's just the same as always. Really, with Clark, Reed, and Bobby, wasn't it?
Yeah, you got to give a shout out to Reed for 10.5 sacks on a season. That's amazing, and it's the most by defensive tackle in Seahawks history, I think.
He's just the third defensive tackle for the Seahawks to reach double figures. It's the third highest behind Cortez Kennedy and John Randall. John Randall was the last Seahawks to do it, and he did so in 2001, which is 17 years. It's a hell of a long time, Adam.
Yeah, and I think one to praise Steve Keim for picking Josh Rosen, because you stink. I don't know, he's just wiry, and he had his weird facial hair this weekend, and he loves himself so much. I don't know, I just think he stinks.
I think there's a lot of things you can blame and put on Steve Keim ahead of the Josh Rosen pick, to be honest. I don't think it was the worst quarterback pick of the lot in that last year's draft class at all, which we kind of alluded to last week. I think he'll be all right. I just need to completely reset and give him three or four probably longer years and actually give him a proper coach, because they did fire their coach on Black Monday, which saw, what was it, a third of the league fire their coaches. But 2018 regular season, obviously we talked about how it overmatched our expectations, but anything else to take away from 2018 season moving into the playoffs, Adam?
The fact that we are so much better set for next season than I thought and feared we'd be.
Yeah.
You know, I thought next year might be the 10-6, 9-7, even 8-8 year, having had a real struggle this year. So it's not always been textbook and exactly the way that we'd want to play, but you got to say fully fair play to get the job done. The biggest compliment you can pay the Seahawks right now is that the national media narrative about us is that we're the team that no one wants to play against.
Yeah.
I think it might be slightly hammed up a touch. I think if you watch closely, there's still enough issues in the team that you would have worries going into the playoffs. And, you know, I think we said via WhatsApp that I think, well, in my opinion, Seahawks are one of the three teams left that I can't see putting four games together and four wins together. But it's amazing they've got themselves in this position, and they deserve an awful lot of credit for it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that team no one wants to face. I think that's team no one wants to face on this weekend. I think the eight teams who ever play in this weekend, they probably do have an argument for that, because for that unpredictability, because you could, it is a bit feast or famine, especially on the offensive side. And then you see what they did against the Chiefs, but then you also watch what they did against, well, the two worst teams in the league per end of season record, the Niners and the Cardinals, and they easily could have lost both of them games and made their jobs and lives a lot harder moving into this weekend, which they didn't. They obviously weren't on Sunday, but it's just, yeah, I think I agree with you. I don't see much of a route. The route would include a bit of a clusterfuck from the Bears this weekend, I think, and if they lay an egg against the Eagles, and that may make things more interesting, because if we get past the Cowboys, it's probably going to be the Saints, and that could be a buzzsaw we run into in New Orleans, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, in a way that a few years ago we had the death march to Atlanta that we kind of foresaw a few weeks before. I think going into New Orleans on that fast track in the dome, that place is going to be rocking. Yeah. And obviously pick plays don't count in New Orleans, so I really think I do think we have a bit of a struggle over there, but let's focus on this week first. Let's go 1-0 this week and see how we get on.
So yeah, there's a few stats which obviously, as ever, I spend Monday morning compiling, as ever, thanks to Pro Football Reference. The 2018 Seahawks are the first team in league history to run for as many yards as the Seahawks did whilst throwing north of 34 passing touchdown. The 1998 49ers ran for 16 yards less than the Seahawks, but they threw 41 touchdowns to the Seahawks 35. That's pretty impressive, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's a heck of a stat that you found, and I think it's more impressive that you found the stat than the stat actually exists, to be honest. And God knows what you're even thinking of in looking for it.
I
shan't pry into your mindset.
No, definitely doing that. Tyler Lockett for this year is the team's leading receiver with 965 yards. It's the fifth year in the seven Russell Wilson seasons that the team have not had a 1,000-yard receiver. 2015 and 2016, Doug Baldwin are the only two 1,000-yard receiving seasons in Pete Carroll's tenure too. Is Tyler Lockett's touchdown on Sunday putting past Jimmy Graham and Bobby Engram on the all-time Seahawks list and into eighth all-time with 19 touchdowns? Chris Carson's 1,151 yards is the 17th best output for a Seahawks running back. 2011, 12, 13 and 14, Marshawn all outgained those, and his 61-yard run on Sunday was his longest in his collegiate or NFL career by 34 yards. It's the fifth 1,000-yard year in Carroll's tenure. No Seahawks running back has ran, though, for more yards when starting less games in a season. Chris Warren in 1993, the only other Seahawk running back to pass 1,000, but he got under 1,100. Chris Carson finished with the fourth highest yard per rush on a 1,000 season for a Seahawks running back. Sean Alexander in 2004 and Marshawn in 2012, only one who bettered it. And they never have had a 1,000-yard rusher and receiver in the same season under Pete Carroll. It's the first time in Russell Wilson's career that he hasn't scored a rushing touchdowns, and 67 rush attempts is also a career low. 35 touchdowns is a career high for Wilson, who broke the franchise all-time record for touchdowns with his 96th, I think it was, on that sounds really low, probably more than that. 7 interceptions is a career low too, same as 2014. His quarterback rating on the year of 110.9 is a career high, and 51 sacks after the 6 on Sunday is the most he's been put on the floor for, a sack rate of 10.7%. Seahawks had one player reach double figures in receiving touchdowns in 3 of the last 4 years. Jimmy Graham last year, Tyler this, and Doug's 14 in 2015. Frank Clark finished the year with 14.5 sacks, just the 16th Seahawk. Sixth Seahawk to break 14 sack barrier. Patrick Kearney was the last to do so in 2007. The others being Tez, Jeff Bryant, Jacob Green, and the franchise leader Mike Sinclair, who tabbed 16.5 in 1998. And as we said, Jaron Reed finished the year with 10.5, just the third defensive tackle in Seahawks history to hit double figures. And that's how I spent my Monday morning, Adam.
And if you're still listening to that, dear listener, you're a better man or woman than I am.
So yeah, obviously the Seahawks now enter the playoffs and they make their trip to face Dak, Zeke and the Dallas Cowboys on Saturday night.
The best clutch field goal kicker in America this year in Josh Brown. Meanwhile, here's Gramatica. Romo holds. 19-yard field goal attempt. Oh, it is fumbled by Romo, and then Romo's going to run to the end zone and he's going to get tackled by Jordan Babineau. Amazing! Unbelievable!
Yeah, Wildcard Weekend, the NFL is here, and the second game of the four on Wildcard Weekend is our Seahawks facing the Dallas Cowboys in Jerry World. We obviously beat them in week 3, was it 24-13, I think the score was? That sounds about right.
So yeah, something like that.
24-13, which was the first win for these 2018 Seahawks after losing the opening two games in Denver and in Chicago. But these are two different teams, as you'd expect to see 3 months after the last time we saw them, Adam, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect to go into this game, you know, 3 months ago and say that the Cowboys' defense is the best position group on the field.
Yeah, that's probably right.
And I think in a game that people would personify as the Cowboys offense versus the Seahawks defense, I actually think it's exactly the opposite is what's going to define who wins this game. I think it's going to be the success of our offense against their revamped and revitalized defense. You know, Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith are playing linebacker now where they weren't really at the start of the season to anything like the level. I mean, those two guys have been brilliantly compared by Chris Wessling to Keekly and Davis from the Panthers from 5 years ago. Those two guys are all over the field at all times. And it's going to be probably the hardest job we've had all year to run on a team this week, because I think we're playing probably the best setup team to stop it. So it'll be really interesting to see how we approach that offensively, because that will be, for me, the defining factor whether we win or lose.
Yeah, Jalen Smith is so cool to see him playing at the level he did. His knee completely blew out a college game before. He was probably going to be a top 10, top 5 pick in that draft, ended up being a second round pick in a couple of years where he just kind of got through, and this year he's really started alongside Leighton Vander Esch. Sean Lee's been a healthy scratch a couple of weeks this year, which we'd have never predicted happening in 2018 for these Cowboys. This is a proper defense with a familiar face calling the plays as well. Currently, in Chris Richard, who seems to be a popular name on the head coaching candidate list on this go round again, like he was last year. But yeah, this is a proper unit. When they faced each other in week three, obviously, as we said, the 39 rushes the Seahawks had for just 113 yards. I mean, it helped them keep the ball, helped them win the time of possession battle, but it was hard graft, as it was in those early weeks for the Seahawks, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that kind of stat line is going to get it done this week.
No.
Unless it's supplemented by, you know, another 25 odd pass completions.
Yeah.
But that would be a lot of plays, and I don't think that's going to be enough.
No. Russell Wilson, back in week three, had 16 completions on 26 attempts, 192 yards, and two passing touchdowns. And interestingly enough, with DeMarcus Lawrence in that unit and all those stars we have on, we just mentioned on that Cowboys defense, they only got to Russell Wilson twice, which points to the importance of getting Message Flukas, Sweezy, and everyone else healthy and firing on Saturday night, Adam.
Yeah, I think I'm right in saying that was the first time that offensive line group that you would call the starters played together on the season.
Pretty certain it was.
I think it was Flukas' first game.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
And it made a marked difference, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think just his bit. I think it's the first one where they went over 100 yards, like seven games to win or whatever it was during that stretch of the season. I think the Cowboys game was where they kind of started to find their feet, or not actually finding their feet. And it's going to be something they're going to have to repeat again against a defense, as we keep saying, is full of confidence. But the offense has some the Cowboys offense has some questions to answer in a big stage game like this, because Dak Prescott kind of needs the signature win more than probably any other quarterback in this wildcard weekend, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Aaron Rodgers went in and decimated them 2 years ago when they thought they were going to go the whole way, and Rodgers just put on an absolute masterclass. Amari Cooper's been sneakily not so good since that Thanksgiving game where he tore up on the Eagles. I don't think he's got caught for more than 30 yards in the last 4 weeks, which is something to keep an eye on. But you know, it's going to be hard for our defense as well. Zeke is one of the few guys that I would say fully justified being that high a pick as a running back, even if they maybe should have taken someone like Jalen Ramsey. I think you can look at Zeke's 3 years and say he was absolutely worth it, because he's, for my money, still the best running back in the league, and probably the one that can make the most out of the least, but by distance, I'd say, actually.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, but in Cooper, they have got a guy that demands coverage, and it's going to be interesting to see what Ken Norton and Pete Carroll can dial up to stop them, because if you can, like, they're an offense that can be stopped, but you have to go and physically do it yourself.
Yeah.
If you allow them to play, they'll beat you.
Yeah, and obviously, well, we talked about how different the Cowboys were back in week three. The Seahawks also were a little different to how they're going to be this weekend. Doug Baldwin missed the game. Brandon Marshall was a starting wide receiver for the Seahawks. David Moore did not see the field, and Ed Dixon also wasn't on the field. Defensively, obviously, I don't think KJ Wright played in this game. Akeem King wasn't a person at this point in the season, so there's a lot of changes on both sides of the ball, and they're going to have to deal with as many differences in the last 3 months as we have with them, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, as I said last week, although it's only a four-month season, the NFL season is long in terms of narratives and what changes and stuff. And it's almost, you know, the only thing that's really the same is that the teams are called the same thing and they're playing the same uniforms as in week three, because it's a different world now.
Yeah. Obviously, one big difference to Seahawks defensively is that Earl Thomas played in this game. Obviously, there's a lot of talk, and there'll continue to be a lot of talk around that, I'm sure, during the broadcast, which will not be boring and time-wasting as anything else that comes out of Troy Aikman's mouth, Adam, on Saturday night.
Of course, you had the famous bow to the Cowboys sideline after his interception last year, which in week three, which was particularly enjoyable. Yeah. It's worth, Bradley McDougal, if he's healthy, hopefully he can replicate and maybe pay homage to Thomas by doing the same sort of thing.
Yeah, so obviously it's a pretty tight game. I think Vegas has this pretty much as a wash, I think. If it isn't, I think it's 1 or 2 point swing on the handicap in Vegas. But a big thing that's going to come down is probably what won the game for the Seahawks back in week three. The Cowboys turned the ball over 3 times and the Seahawks didn't. It's always key for Pete Carroll. It's one of the main principles and things that Pete Carroll trots out when they win games. It's usually one of the deciding factors. It's definitely going to be a case on Saturday night in the game, which is pretty close and pretty hard to call as we stand, 48 hours away from it, Adam?
Yeah, it was a pretty similar game to the game in Jerry World last year when I think we had 3 killer turnovers on them that won us the game. One of them was a pick six from Justin Coleman, and there was a punch out by someone as well. And it's really going to annoy me. It might have been Byron Maxwell, actually.
Yes, that's right.
Who punched the ball out. Punched the ball out.
Byron Maxwell was, I presume, starter opposite Shaquille Griffin this year.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy.
Sorry.
I would say that, it's the ultimate Carroll cliche, but, keeping hold of the ball, winning the turnover battle. If ever there was a game where you really think it could make a big difference, it's going to be this one.
And quieting down a crowd, which is going to be rabid and quite large in Jerry World. But obviously, if the Seahawks do win the game, and depending on what happens elsewhere, if it is the Saints and the Eagles do beat the Bears, if the Bears beat the Eagles and we beat the Cowboys, it will be the Saints, and that will be the Sunday evening game. And if it is the Rams, thanks to the Eagles beating the Bears in Chicago, it will be the Saints. Same time as this game this week on Saturday Night Football, which is going to be a bit different, but with all college football season just finishing, or only one game left in the college football season, the national title game next week, it's kind of going to be the last late Saturday night for a while watching this sport, isn't it?
I'm not going to miss the late nights, I'm not going to lie, because they really are an absolute killer.
So how is your confidence moving into Saturday? And he says Sunday, Saturday night against the Cowboys, Adam?
I find it really tricky. Yeah. I was saying to a mate on Sunday that I don't know how anyone could have the kind of confidence / arrogance to predict this game with any level of certainty. I can see any kind of outcome apart from a heavy Cowboys win.
Yeah,
I could see kind of any other outcome, because I don't think Dallas are particularly well set to play from being 10 points behind, and if we can get out to a lead, that could make a big difference. But I don't know. It really is a toss of a coin. And it's only my support that's making me predict a Seahawk win by maybe 23-21 or something like that.
Yeah, I think 27-23 kind of seems about right. I think it'd be close, and I think being in Dallas will add quite a lot, probably a score to what they did in Seattle a few months ago. But I could literally talk myself in and out of, as you say, every single which way of this game landing and this game going, and what my mood is going to be like on Sunday morning. I think 27-23 kind of thing for the Seahawks, just, but as you say, just through just the rose-tinted spectacles more than anything. Who's going to be important on the offensive side of the ball, one to watch for these Seahawks on Saturday night, Adam?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, besides the obvious, let's go with David Moore being important.
Yeah.
You know, just having that extra big body guy on the outside. Brandon Marshall, if I'm not mistaken, got quite a few open targets in week three.
Yeah.
And had, it was the start of his drops, yeah, wasn't it?
He had six targets, two catches and 30 yards, with his longest catch being for 27 of those 30. So.
And I have a feeling that was a bit of a miracle catch.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
So, you know, if we can get more matched up one-on-one, you know, it is in a dome. The conditions are going to be ideal for Wilson to air it out. So, you know, maybe he can be key outside of the obvious Baldwin, Lockett, yeah, Carson, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think just the health of Sweezy and DJ Fluker is going to say a hell of a lot, because, oof, that did not look good on Sunday against a pretty nondescript defensive line, Arizona. So if we have both of them, then it's a massive, massive plus for these Seahawks. If they have one of them, that would be better, but obviously I think two would be, you'd have, give you the most confidence heading into the game, wouldn't it, if both are not on the inactive list.
Yeah, 100%. Couldn't agree more. Saturday evening.
So, yeah, so hopefully we both hope and sort of think that the Seahawks are going through into the next round of the playoffs. But before we get into all that, we'll quickly have a quick spin and get in the bin.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and Mike, and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, on playoff wildcard weekend in the NFL, this week's Get in the Bin could have a whole cavalcade of nominees. I'm going to go first, and I'm going to put Ben Roethlisberger in the bin because he is the root of all evils in Pittsburgh, I have a feeling, and he just has no... His track record is probably pushing me to put him in the bin for everything he's done, because if the things he's done during his... or allegedly done in his NFL career have not been a bit distasteful, shall we say, and he has shown, one, no remorse or no tact or anything like that in the aftermath of all that stuff. But the way he's dealt with every issue going on in that building this season, the way he dealt with the Le'Veon Bell stuff, the way he's dealt with obviously Antonio Brown, you go back and I think a few people on Twitter pointed out how he's dealt with the awkward personalities in that locker room before. You would not see that. For all the criticism we give to our quarterback, Russell Wilson, it's an unfair probably comparison to make, but you just would not see that happen in the building in Seattle. I'm coming from the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks. It's just, I think it's probably the best way to describe it, Adam.
So that's interesting, because I saw a tweet that I found quite interesting saying that, you know, Ben had his doubts about Todd Haley's character and his doubts about Martavis Bryant's character, and then he called out Le'Veon Bell and now he's called out Antonio Brown. But was he actually wrong with any of those things? Because I think if you look at it, those are the four guys, especially if you look at what Le'Veon Bell did.
Todd Haley, yeah, he's been proven right in a few different places. Martavis Bryant needed the Josh Gordon kid gloves, and he didn't get that from the person who's supposed to be at the hub of that locker room. Who's the other one? Le'Veon Bell is just, as you hear me say in the intro, just a complete weapon. Antonio Brown, I think Ryan Clark, I think it was, said on ESPN that they knew the monster they were going to create when they give him all that money. So they've kind of made a rough throw back. But Ben Roethlisberger just, can't have him. Sorry.
I quite like him. I don't know what it is. I mean, obviously, notwithstanding the allegations from his past, that no. You know, I can't profess to say I know the full ins and outs to make a comment on that. But based on being a fan of and much more watching fan for the last 7 or 8 years, I don't know. I I'm on board with him, and I think the team seems to play tough for him, and his offensive line seem to play tough for him. But I guess you could argue that if something, you know, the amount of people that have been alienated, rightly or wrongly, it's either all of their fault or it's his fault, and it's probably more likely to be him. But I just thought it was an interesting counter argument that when you look at the players that have fallen out, or the people he has fallen out with, a lot of them are just bad.
Yeah, there's also the stuff he said about the second or third round draft pick last year, Mason Rudolph, who is quite clearly probably the next in line to be his replacement. He has no inter- I know, I think we talked about this before. The whole way he's dealt with that, just kind of, it just, yeah, I don't know.
I didn't mind that either, to be honest. Because if I was him, I'd be pissed off that they were just taking a guy with a third round pick when they could be making their team better in the immediacy. I find it amazing. Like, Joe Flacco is in the anti-bin, I would say, for the way in which he's dealt with Lamar Jackson literally coming in and making him unemployed in a month's time. And I don't think I'd have the wiring to be like that, to be honest. I think I'd be much more like Big Ben to get this guy the hell out of it.
He's the highest, Joe Flacco is the highest paid quarterback that's in the playoffs, but he's also the one who's in the playoffs who isn't going to be starting this weekend, which is quite wild. anyone for your bin this week, Adam?
Well, there's obviously been a raft of, you know, coaching changes and whatever. And I think one to watch for the bin is John Elway. Because he's been particularly good at passing the buck of blame. And Vance Joseph has not been an excellent coach by any stretch. He's not done that well, but he's not really been given much of a hand to work with, especially at the quarterback position, where it's ironic that Case Keenum is the guy that the Broncos didn't need, but you could argue is the guy that Minnesota still needs, and been replaced by just the ultimate wet wipe in Kirk Cousins. there's just no other way. I mean, trying to watch him tell Adam Thielen how to run his routes, I oh my goodness, he is a funny old bloke. It's Kirk.
I think he's yet to win a game, a meaningful game, obviously playoff game and primetime game. He's Kirk Cousins, his record is terrible. Also, John Elway, I think he's been in the bin since his Colin Kaepernick, we offered him money kind of thing a few weeks ago.
Well, that's also true.
He's a long-standing member. He's reaching Hugh Jackson territory. Also, another team can go in the bin. Cincinnati Bengals for just being so see-through for what they did 6 weeks ago. I called it, and he's getting interviews. What in the last 6 weeks of Hugh Jackson Cincinnati has earned him the right to an interview for anything, apart from, like, I don't know, weekend shifts at Wendy's? What has he done in that building for since they didn't win a game while he was whatever special assistant, was it the Dwight Schrute of the Cincinnati Bengals? It's just kind of, it's remarkable. The NFL is a remarkable, remarkable league at times. But yeah, John Elway deserves everything. I think if he wasn't John Elway in Denver, I don't think he'd be in the league anymore, Adam.
I make you right. And the other person who I think can get in the bin, Tom Coughlin doing the like official statement on Jaguars headed paper. I am fairly uneasy with these old white curmudgeons telling young black athletes what is and what isn't the correct way to act as a professional footballer, especially when people like Caldwell and Coughlin are more than happy to say, here, Blake Bortles, have $20 million and be our quarterback again. You know, if we're looking at who's actually hurting their team here, Leonard Fournette sitting on the bench when he's not playing anyway, or Tom Coughlin having Cody Kessler and Blake Bortles as quarterbacks, if you ask me, Fournette's not the one who needs a scolding.
No, I think Blake Bortles handled it quite well on Monday morning, where he said if the team is unsuccessful, the team struggles, it's always going to be the quarterback, which is a scapegoat, and I knew what I was signing him for, which is a pretty level-headed way of taking it all the stuff, all the flack he's took, and all the criticism he's taken for how the Jaguars just fell off the cliff this year. It's quite impressive. It's like, as you said, with Joe Flacco, it's quite encouraging to watch someone take that when you also, again, I'm going to point back to him, how Ben Roethlisberger handles things, Adam.
I think, yeah, Bortles is a guy who is obviously not the most talented, but at least he's aware of what he is. And there's nothing worse than when you see the quarterback who's just not aware of what he is. And I think at least Bortles got that going for him, even if it's not much of a compliment in the long run.
And another one for getting in the bin. It's obviously obvious because it's been a season-long thing. ESPN's coverage of last night's Rose Bowl, where it was just a 3 hours booking session for the ball bag of Urban Meyer, who's now currently teaching the ethics class at Ohio State, which is just remarkable. There's a clip from First Take yesterday with Charlie Caruso, Ryan Clark, a couple of those guys, I can't remember, where when Charlie Caruso, or Charlie Arnold, as she is on ESPN, mentions that the fact that he's going to be teaching ethics by Wednesday morning, all three of the former players, may I add, fall about in hysterics, because it's unnecessary and it's completely wide of the mark, and it's kind of just it's just like a sunken place they kind of go into with Urban Meyer, because in a year's time, when the USC job comes up for grabs, when they finally get rid of Helton, he's going to be he's not going to be very ethical, is he, Adam?
Well, he's either going to take that job or he might take the Patriots job.
Oh, oh God, imagine that. I didn't think about that.
Because he's friends with Belichick, isn't he?
Yeah, probably. Sounds about right.
So yeah, I wonder if that might be if that may be a potential for him in a year's time.
Yeah, it was so annoying last night. I know the Huskies were terrible and the game was in hand despite all the late dramatics. Well, in hand pretty early, so it just led them to just constantly going on about him, and it's just like, you do realise the stuff he let happen at that school. Also though, on the ante to that, the opposite of in the bin, whatever, put on the pedestal this week, Scott Van Pelt, who hosts SportsCenter. Last night, obviously, Tuesday night, saw the sad death of Tyler Trent. If no one's seen him, definitely go and Google and watch all the YouTube videos that he did. He's a Purdue Boilermakers superfan at 20 years of age, was terminally ill with a rare form of bone cancer. Scott Van Pelt had him on SportsCenter about 6 or 7 weeks ago and said that he would save his seat next to him for him. And the end of last night's ESPN Sports Center with SVP is an amazing, amazing tribute to a kid who has inspired far too many people to mention. And I think he probably ever would really fully appreciate while he was around, Adam.
Yeah, an incredible story. One that, yeah, been very difficult to avoid or to miss, should I say, since he was there as an inspirational figure when they actually beat Ohio State. Purdue a couple of months ago, and as I said to you earlier, the only thing we can hope is that he's no longer in pain, because if you read any of his blogs and things like that, it had become incredibly difficult. So we hope he rests in peace.
Yeah, and like I said, it was perfectly done and perfectly handled by SVP, who's one of the very best at the worldwide leader. Is there any locks or shocks can be done from this week in the wildcard weekend at all?
I don't really think so, because actually I think for the first time ever, the wild card weekend has got four games that you don't want to miss a play of. You know, there's always normally one with like the Titans in it or Brock Osweiler's quarterbacking the Texans, whereas this time you've got eight teams that you want to watch them all, even if they can't all win the Super Bowl, you wouldn't have thought. Actually, I mean, probably the worst game for the neutral would probably be ours, I think, the one that could be the most... the biggest slog, and obviously we're going to watch that one because it's our boys, but the other three games are going to be absolute belters, I reckon.
Yeah, and I said a few weeks ago, you do not want to get the Indianapolis Colts in the playoffs, and the Colts finally got through into the playoffs thanks to Marcus Mariota not having any feeling sensation in his arms, which doesn't sound entirely pleasant for most of the season in Tennessee. They are going to be a dangerous team to face in the playoffs, and obviously the first up is divisional rival in a building where T.Y. Hilton has an average of 135 yards and a touchdown when he plays at Houston against the Texans, which obviously is every year because they're in the same division. That might be the best game of the lot, I think, for me.
Yeah, I agree. One thing that came up that I wanted to pick your brains on, because I think, unless I misread it in our WhatsApp group, you were saying that you were intimating that you think it might be the end of Shaquem Griffin in Seattle in the not too distant future.
I would not be surprised. Pete Carroll talked about the avoidable issues on the two block punts, and if you watch the two block punts, the unavoidable issue is Shaquem Griffin getting blown up on both of them and not seeming to realise he was putting the punter, punter's leg in danger. He just doesn't seem to be contributing enough. The story is amazing. all of that, but a position which is, I mean, we have seen other, he's played a position on punts and kicks, well, like that. Kevin Pierre-Lewis played a couple of years. We don't seem to really miss him, and he's now doing exactly the same in Kansas. We give him up for a player who's no longer on the team. I don't see him making the team next year, especially with
really.
You'd expect him. They're going to have to get a couple of linebackers in. You'd expect they're going to spend higher draft capital on linebackers as they did. Rob Staton said last time he was on the pod that this seems to be the year they need to do it. And there's some pretty decent players. Obviously, Dakota Allen is someone I would love if the Seahawks drafted him. For anyone who watched Last Chance U, he's probably going to be a day two pick, so that could be interesting to watch. But they're going to invest in the position, and I think he's going to be the 54th guy kind of thing. I think that's kind of how it would shake out.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things, personally. And
well, no, there was that one time you thought you were right, but you weren't. So you were wrong about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does make sense in fairness, doesn't it?
Yeah, no. There is a lot of examples, recent and long term examples of that happening. Predictions for the other three playoff games, Adam.
Oh, goodness, you've really thrown me in that one. I'm not going to give you scores, but I'm going to go Bears, Texans, Chargers.
I'm going to go Bears, Colts, and Ravens. Because Lamar Jackson is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's only... If I was going to be logical, I would say the Ravens, but I just wonder that, you know, the Chargers have seen them. They've seen them once already. I think the Chargers are a better road team than they are a home team this year as well.
It's barely a home team, really.
Yeah, well, precisely.
It's going to be like the Ravens next year.
I wonder if maybe just the Chargers, having seen what the Ravens have to throw at them, if that helps you put it on tape, and learn from it a bit better.
Yeah, but also... There is the early game on the Sunday, and they are travelling from the West Coast to the East Coast to a cold climate
Is a shambles, by the way.
Yeah, which always seems to be us the last few years. We had Carolina at 10 a.m. on a Sunday after playing a late game on the Sunday night the week before. It's just all very strange how that happens. If you swap the Chicago Eagles game around with the Ravens game, I'd probably have a little bit more confidence in the Chargers, but I think Lamar and that defense will in that game, because they just went after Baker Mayfield on that final drive, and Baker did deliver two or three absolute dimes, and he's going to be a star and definitely should be Offensive Rookie of the Year over Saquon. But yeah, that Ravens defense is legit in that home.
I mean, fair play to the defensive coordinator to go 4-0 blitzes.
It's incredible. Like,
all out.
Yeah.
That is stones.
Yeah, incredible. And obviously, it was all, at the same time, he's unlucky that he got intercepted at the same time. CJ Mosley caught an interception, which won the game for the Ravens and ended everything in Pittsburgh, it appears. And then obviously next week, the Saints, Rams, Chiefs, and Patriots join the party, which will be a different kind of howl. Depending on what the Seahawks do on Saturday night. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can, and we definitely do urge you to on all the usual means, thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com, on Facebook, UK Seattle Seahawks fans, on Twitter, @SeahawkersUK, personal Twitters, @Stu_Court, and @AdamDNathan. That one in particular is enjoying putting the pressure on, shall we say, and having a pretty enjoyable Christmas for Spurs overall, wasn't it?
Not bad at all. We'll take 2 wins out of 3 every day of the week.
No, and for my boys, Cov have got the double over Southend, Charlton and Wickham, the footballing heavyweights that are, have 38 points on the 2nd of January, and 18 of those points have come against those three teams. So it's just a shame it's only a 24-team league and not a 4-team league, really. But, obviously then February Super Bowl night in Birmingham, Broad Street, O'Neill's, still spaces and places available, kicking off from about 8 o'clock on Super Bowl night. So if you haven't yet booked your hotels and stuff, there's plenty of options around and on Broad Street for that. Come and join us. Entry fee is up to you, and whatever you pay to get in to the space we have, all that money will go to one of our chapter charities. And as the time ticks onto Thursday, it is January 3rd, and January 3rd 3 years ago was a pretty awful day for UK Seahawks. It is 3 years today since we lost our former chapter president, Ian Robert Smith, So yeah, and as always, especially on this day, this time of year, all our thoughts with Ian's family, Adam.
Absolutely, couldn't have put it better myself.
Yeah, so this has been the Possession Podcast. From whatever area of the world you watch the game, enjoy it this weekend, and
go Hawks.
Amazing. I mean, you could tell a lot about somebody when they go through a whole lot of stuff, and the fact that he's out there playing, the fact that he's out there still making plays says a lot about who he is, and I love that dude, man. He goes out there, he has that winning mindset every time he's out there on the field, regardless if he's getting double teamed, regardless if he's getting triple teamed. He does whatever he has to do to be able to help us win, and that's one of the reasons why we're so great in the receiving.